This is a complete and total rerun of what happened in UKIP towards 2014. I think Nigel has a very big role to play, but not as leader. It's almost as though being on the sidelines sniping is a lot more fun than actually being in government and having to do something. People like Ben Habib and Rupert Lowe are talented individuals, and you don't get rid of your good people in case anything happens to you, or in case you fall, or in case you want to retire. It's the very epitome of bad leadership if the organization you leave falls apart when you've gone. And why does things fall apart? Because the talent, all the talent has been got rid of. And if you go back over the 15 years, the list is getting quite long now of people who've fallen out. The list of names is over 50. And I would be very, very surprised if there aren't more to come. Nigel performed extremely well in the parliament. He made some great speeches. But what he wasn't really comfortable with was somebody else getting a bit of TV and somebody else getting this, that, the other. Anybody else who was looking like a rising star very soon went. He can't keep people on board. He doesn't treat them right. I'll give you an example of that. He would have a habit of, if he were trying to give a view, of getting his phone out and actually phoning somebody or doing text or something while you were talking, and let that person know he was not interested in anything you had to say. This is not about anything but getting rid of Rupert Lowe.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. I have a very special guest for you today, and that is Mr. Godfrey Bloom, who until 2014 was the UK Independence Party member of the European Parliament. And his leader, of course, was one Nigel Farage. And for those of you that have not kept up with things, Farage is very much in the news at the moment because there is basically a crisis in the Reform Party, whereby one Rupert Lowe has criticised Farage for being a bit of a messiah figure, says he wouldn't necessarily be a great prime minister, and has been blessed by Mr. Elon Musk as being a desirable successor to Nigel Farage, with the result that just after Lowe went public with his criticisms, he's had the whip removed and has been accused of bullying and various other chicanery. So I thought I'd ask someone that knows him well about this. So Godfrey, hello.
Hello there. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. Now, based on your substantial interactions with Mr. Farage, how predictable do you, this party was doing really well in the polls. It was leading in the polls. It was doing really, really well. There was a degree to which it came across to some of us as a bit of a personality cult. It's as though every time he goes away, things blow up. But how predictable was this sort of thing, do you think, that this should have happened?
Well, I fear it was totally and utterly predictable, wasn't it? I mean, you've only got to look at the background. This is a complete and total rerun of what happened in UKIP towards 2014. Complete and total rerun. And it didn't need to be like this. But what we have in politics at the moment, and it's not just Nigel, there is a failure of leadership and the concept of leadership. In my view, there are a few people who are born leaders, but they are few. Most people have a bit of natural leadership in them, and it has to be brought out. In my case, for example, that was the Army, Sandhurst training, leadership training courses, the Ashridge management course there, and so on and so forth. So you have the rudiments, perhaps, of a bit of leadership, but it needs polishing up and sorting out a bit. And that's really most of us. I'm just an ordinary guy that had the benefit of that kind of training. But if you don't have that training, you're struggling constantly, because the phrase that came in the 1980s to places like Sandhurst and Ashridge Management was a phrase called man management. Man management. It was a sort of buzzy word that came from the United States. But you see, if you're going to manage the sort of mavericks you get in politics, and when you get in smaller parties, you have self-made millionaires like Rupert Lowe and various other ones who are eccentric characters in many ways, very talented in their field, but they are very difficult to manage and very difficult to lead. And it takes particularly high level of skill in those fields to do that. And I think if I may use a cricketing analogy, Geoffrey Boycott was probably one of the finest post-war batsmen that England ever had. But nobody for a moment would have considered him to be captain of England. He was never going to be a captain. He's not captain material. He's too introverted and too introspective. And this is one of the problems that we have. Now, Nigel is a very good political performer. He's excellent in that role and very patriotic. But of course, he has no experience or training in man management or leadership. And it is something that you need training. So when you get people like Rupert Lowe, a self-made multimillionaire, and various others in the past, and if you go back over the 15 years, the list is getting quite long now of people who've fallen out, myself included. Mm-hmm. This is the problem that we've got. And I think Nigel has a very big role to play, as indeed Boycott did for the England cricket side, but not as leader. It's not the right role for him.
When he started off, I mean, what it occurs to me is he's the charismatic type in whatever way, which attracts people, and he's able to adopt an element of it, I'm sure is real, an element of it is a persona perhaps, a sort of Boris-like bon vivant, who likes a drink and a smoke and is a laugh and is fun and engages with people in a way that perhaps someone like Nick Griffin, when he was the leader of the BNP, was less good at doing. So he's got that. But then he, so the charisma, if you like, the slight messiah thing, perhaps. But then the party like that, that's to the right, that's a radical, a little bit radical, is going to attract, as you say, eccentric characters that are going to have socially difficult traits. I mean, the kind of person that might hit a journalist over the head with a clipboard, you know, that sort of thing, right? People that have and those traits are engaging. Those traits make them attractive and genuine and are a reflection of how strongly they feel. But you also have to be able, I think you're saying, to cope with and know how to deal with those people. And there was a long period where he wasn't the leader. He was the charismatic type that they'd roll out for Newsnight or something, but somebody else, I forget the names, Titford, these various names in the back of my head, was the leader. They were the leader, and he was the sort of the showman. Why did that change?
Well, the leaders that were there, the party, the UKIP party leaders, really were rather weak. They weren't natural leaders themselves. Some of them were very nice gentlemen and straightforward chaps who I liked, but they weren't natural leaders of what is a supposedly radical party in the rough and tumble of politics. And it's very easy to be a maverick figure, charismatic figure on the outside, observing these things. But if you're going to stand at a Westminster election, you have to be going forward as a team. You have to be leading a team and presenting a team. And I made this point to Andrew Neil in 2014, and that interview for your viewers who might be interested, that is recorded, and that's still up on my website, my interview with Andrew Neil, just before the Westminster elections. And I explained to Andrew Neil that the British electorate love to vote for a maverick and somebody charismatic like Nigel in things like by-elections or local elections or European elections, as they were, then were. But if you're going to the country and you're trying to persuade people that you can form a government, you know, with a Home Office minister and a Foreign Office minister, so on and so on, to persuade the electorate of that, you have to be a man manager and a leader. And that's where being a maverick, charismatic kind of individual actually falls down. And we saw that with Boris. Nigel and Boris are sisters under the skin, if I may use that phrase. You know, they're just the same person. They don't do detail. They're very good on the hoof and they're very charismatic. But that is not the way to form a government in 3 or 4 years' time. And it was bound to fall apart. Plus the fact you have to have a team. And if you go back to a lot of these people across the board, and have a look at their school photographs and see if they were in any way involved in team sport. And you'll find that they weren't. Nigel was a very good school, Dulwich College, but he wasn't in the rugby 15. And that's where you learn a lot as a young man. Your leadership skills is on the rugby pitch. And it could be a rugby club or something like that. I don't mean it has to be good. It doesn't have to be the Harlequins, but you have to be able to lead people in a physical contact game like that. It needs leadership.
Your view would be that there's the sort of optimum balance, and that someone like, I don't know, Bill Clinton had that balance between charisma and the ability to organise people, whereas someone like Nigel just doesn't have, it's too skewed.
Well, that's right. And I think we've all got skills to bring. For example, I was once the chief executive officer of a life insurance company, for example. But I had a very good team around me because I believe in having a good team, because I'm a rather selfish individual. I actually like good people around me to help me through bits I don't understand. It would have been a disaster to make me head of the company's IT. A disaster. I don't think about IT at all. So we've all got our skills. And I think it's horses for courses. And I think Nigel has a huge role to play, but not leading the charge for a radical party, which requires more than just charisma and political ability. It requires rather a lot more than that. And we're finding that it's not just Nigel, is it? I mean, Keir Starmer could barely string a sentence together. I mean, dear, oh, dear. If he hadn't had a Labour badge on, he'd never be elected. And none of the MPs that he had would be elected, or his front bench. But he wore a red rose, red rosette. And if you
he has very little, it seems, very little charisma and ability to connect with people, but he can organise. He's good at organising, he's good at detail. So he's perhaps the other extreme. But what would you say to those that note that every time Nigel has stood down as leader saying, I want to have my life again, whatever party it is he stood down from has basically fallen apart into infighting and nonsense. And then when he comes back, he seems to revive it, as he did with Reform. It wasn't doing very well. He comes back, takes over the leadership, and then they manage to get five MPs and all these votes. He must have something there.
Well, not really. What you're looking for is that what should be good is if the leader gets shot, if the leader gets badly injured and he's carried off the pitch at Twickenham, that it doesn't fall apart. That's what man management and leadership is all about. It shouldn't be that when you go, it falls apart. And why does things fall apart? Because all the talent has been got rid of. And I think we'd both agree, whether we agree with him or not, people like Ben Habib and Rupert Lowe are talented individuals. And that is something that somebody who is, dare I say, preclinical sociopath, and I think most politicians are, you don't get rid of your good people in case anything happens to you, or in case you fall, or in case you want to retire. It's the very epitome of bad leadership and man management if the organisation you leave falls apart when you've gone.
That is a good point. Yes, it's not how you want an army to run. An army, as you say, should run that if the person, I don't know, who's leading the men, the major or something, is shot, then immediately there is a captain who is there to take over and can take over competently and well. So this, you're saying he has a difficulty with people around him who might compete for the limelight, like Rupert Lowe, who has very successfully prosecuted the case with regard to these Pakistani gangs. With regard to other issues, he's articulate, he's intelligent, he's charismatic, he's popular. A lot of people I know who are online a lot are very, very, very unhappy about his treatment. And is this it, that he's a problem because he's a competitor, whereas someone like Lee Anderson doesn't come across as anywhere near as bright, to be honest. And so one can't see him taking over. One can see Rupert Lowe taking over.
Well, yes. And I think this is one of the problems that if you look at, give you an example of this, UKIP in 2004 got 11 MEPs. And by the end of that four-year period, only five were taking the whip. And then in 2009, 15 UKIP MEPs were elected. And at the end of that time, only six were taking the whip. That shows you a disastrous track record of man management. and leadership. And Nigel performed extremely well in the parliament. He made some great speeches, so on and so forth. But what he didn't really, wasn't really comfortable with was somebody else getting a bit of TV and somebody else getting this, that, and the other. They very soon went. Anybody else who was looking like a rising star very soon went.
What kind of issues did they fall out with him over?
There were all sorts of various issues, and of course, I don't know whether the what all the individuals who left were leaving for. But there was certainly a lack of transparency on the use of things like budgets. For example, the European Union, we're a political party, we're entitled to a fairly significant budget. And the MEPs were actually directors and were all underwrote and signed where the budget was going and what it was being used for. And that made a lot of people very uncomfortable. A lot of people resigned on that principle alone. And of course, we see now we have an issue, don't we, that, and this is what Ben Habib brought out, that reform is a limited company. And it belongs to the majority shareholding belongs to Nigel Farage. And that is, I would argue, suspicious. And Ben Habib left on that basis. And this is what Rupert Lowe was saying behind the scenes. We can't go to the country, can we, in 3 years' time at the Westminster election, putting forward a limited company, vote for a limited company, the major shareholder of which is Nigel Farage. You just can't offer that. It just isn't the way you can do things. And of course, the closer you get to an election, the more that would be exposed. And you cannot afford to get rid of the kind of talent that Ben Habib and Rupert Lowe had. Now, good leadership, natural leadership, trained leadership and man management would have kept those people on board. But he can't keep people on board. He doesn't treat them right. We give you an example of that. We had a retired corporal, parachute regiment corporal, as a UKIP MEP, who took over from me. He was made a spokesman for defence, and he wanted to talk to Nigel about, something that he wasn't too happy about. I wasn't part of that. But he would have a habit of, if you were trying to give a view, of getting his phone out and actually phoning somebody or doing text or something while you were talking. Let that person know he was not interested in anything you had to say. And of course, what we've got to do now, just bear in mind here, I voted for reform, and on my channels, I've got about, a quarter of a million followers in various channels, I recommended, maybe a little bit reluctantly, that people voted reform because there was no other game in town. But I was sceptical from the start, really. So I'm not anti-reform. I'm not a closet Tory or anything like that. What I'm actually saying is, reform are the only game in town a year ago, and they're sort of the only game in town for people of the right, if you want to use that badly dated view, left and right, nonsense these days. That is the thing. But you're going to have to offer a shadow cabinet, and you cannot possibly afford to lose the Rupert Lowes and Ben Habibs. And I would be very, very surprised if there aren't more to come. Very surprised if there aren't more to come.
How did you manage to, because you were kind of almost, you seemed almost like the de facto deputy in people's minds in that period. It was Nigel and it was you that were the main, that were the prominent spokespeople that were on interviews and things like this. How did you manage to have it with them?
Well, I didn't, because as soon as I started to get TV and as soon as I started to get a round of applause on Question Time or whatever it was by giving the party view, basically, on what things were, whether it was immigration or whether it's economics, so on and so forth. And that spooked the leadership. And of course, the leadership are all put in place by Nigel so that they will do what they are bid. And I can understand that, but it's not healthy. It's not a healthy thing. And sooner or later, people will say, just a minute, they don't do this because we have no press. We have no serious political interests anymore. I mean, they're completely useless. But they say, Mr. Farage, who's your shadow Foreign Secretary? Who will be your Foreign Secretary? Who will be your Home Secretary? Who will be your Defence Secretary? And of course, Nigel just said the other day, I've only got six MPs. I can't possibly form. It's ridiculous to ask me to form a shadow front bench. Well, you see, that's very, very stupid thinking, if you think about it. He should be going to people in Reform who come forward to Reform and be members of Reform who have expertise. The fact that you're elected or not is neither here nor there. There's only six. But in UKIP, for example, to give you another example of UKIP, we had a very young, very articulate Edinburgh surgeon who was a member of UKIP, who was obviously the choice to be the NHS spokesman. He was in practice, you know, in Edinburgh. We had a very recently retired submarine commander from the Royal Navy who would have been a natural defence spokesman. And all we did was fish from the pond of 10 MEPs who are, I have to say, sadly, rather van ordinaire. And so you can't do that. You have to present a team.
They promote themselves, whether it's UKIP or whether it's Reform, as being we're the anti-woke, we're the pro-free speech party. And one of the things that they're criticising Rupert Lowe for, from what I can work out, is basically making a few jokes about girls. And as I understand it, that's why you had the whip withdrawn, because you made some joke about women or something like that.
No, that was the trigger. That was like the assassination of Gambro Princep in, you know, in 1914. That was the trigger. That wasn't the reason. The reason was...
if you don't mind, could you tell me about like the build-up of being in good relations with him to it being a problem? Kind of.
They started to deteriorate, and you have more expertise in this field than I do. Nigel was a very much more easygoing, clubbable sort of individual before 2010. Then he had that dreadful air crash, and I think you and I might have discussed this before. He had this terrible letter, and he was injured and badly shaken up. And the post-2010 Nigel Farage was not the same man, Ed. He wasn't the same man. And I think it was a form of post-traumatic stress or something. Call it what you like. It's not my field. But that's obviously... He was a different man. And there's a degree of paranoia if somebody else comes along who is talented. Now, my old boss years ago said, never give me examples of one. So there's no point in talking about Rupert Lowe. But if you talk about Rupert Lowe, Ben Habib, and going back even further, Dr. North, going back further, you know, the list of names is over 50. There's over 50 names of quite high-profile UKIP MEPs or supporters who suddenly vanished from the scene because they were no longer flavour of the day. And it happens like that. Now, you're much more experienced in this field and what kind of moves that personality than I am. But I would say, just like Boris Johnson and the rest of them, it's a political thing. Politics tends to attract some weirdos, let's be brutally frank. Party politics attracts weirdos. And the more, if you were sociopathic, you are, the faster you climb the greasy pole. Because it's a very big asset in politics.
It attracts non-conventional politics, I think. Politics outside Labour and Conservative and Liberal. That's going to attract, as you say, weirdos, I think, particularly that.
It is, but I don't think it's that simple. I think big parties do as well. But the difference with the big party is that they know they have to hide it. They know they have to sort of skate over it a bit. They have to polish up their act. And it was you, I remember now, that made the point like that of Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson, you know, is a very far from balanced individual, but he knows how to hide it under that bluff. I'm an Englishman, you know, with scruffy hair and so on and so forth. He hides it. That's not Boris Johnson at all. That's his persona. That's what he puts in the shop window. Not Boris Johnson at all. And what you see in the shop window for any of these political leaders, in my view, is not that, not what they appear to be, with the exception, I have to say, of Keir Starmer, who does actually look like a complete turd, sounds like a turd, is a turd. At least what you see in his shop window is what you get.
Yes, true. So you know, that's an interesting point. So it may well be that there was some kind of trauma or perhaps even brain damage as a consequence of this crash, if he hit his head. And you're saying he became much more sort of paranoid and much more inclined to surround himself with reassuring sycophants and then to turn on anyone that might even slightly rock the boat. And that's what you were doing.
That's exactly the situation, yeah.
Now, before we continue, I'd like to do something rather exciting. I know that you Generation Z people, you want to have read all of the based books, you want to have imbibed all of the most radical and important scientific knowledge, but you don't particularly like reading very much. So what if there was an app that would take those books, summarise them for you, and then read them back to you in less than 25 minutes? Well, fortunately, such an app exists, and that app is called Legion.com. They have, for example, my book, The Past is a Future Country, The Coming Conservative Demographic Revolution, by myself and my friend Ollie Rayner Hills, in which we look at the way that there is clearly going to be a shift based on breeding patterns among the more intelligent back towards us being right-wing, and the return, therefore, of a kind of genetically right-wing society, a kind of neo-Byzantium. And here it is, The Past of the Future Country. And so you don't even have to read the book if you don't want to. This can inject it straight from the phone into your brain box. And if you sign up today with the code TJH, then, of course, you can get a 10% discount. So Legion.com, sign up now. All the base knowledge from your phone, direct to your brain.
Yeah. So what so leading up to it, were there any other examples about, well, we know what the trigger was, the remark about sluts or whatever. But leading up to it, were there any other arguments with him that made you think, God, what's going on here?
Yes, we had some big arguments on this very point of not presenting a team, not presenting a shadow cabinet, or having some sort of idea what we were going to do at Westminster and how to actually put forward a team, rather than what was, basically a one-man band. And that was the problem. He said to me, he said, the trouble is, whenever I'm being interviewed by the press, they want to talk about you. Are you make right. of that what you make of that what you will?
So in 2010, when you had your Schultz incident, in public in the Parliament, he looked like he had your back and he looked like he was on your side, but behind the scenes,
absolutely, yeah.
Oh, so he was with you behind the scenes as well.
Absolutely, no question. But then suddenly, I think, and of course, I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't some pressure elsewhere. A lot of people don't quite know that he is quite impressionable. So if somebody tapped on his shoulder and dripped a little bit of poison in, bit by bit, that would actually affect him. And that isn't true of just, Nigel. A lot of people like that, dripping the poison. And there is a military historian, which I flatter myself I am, if not necessarily a very high-profile one, Eisenhower was much the same. They used to say the same of General Eisenhower, that his views were very much based on who he saw last.
Yes, I know someone like that. It's rather like dealing with a child. One day they're into this kind of toy, and then the next day the kid at school has Thundercats rather than He-Man, and they're into that, and then the next day they're into that. And if they're caught by, a sting operation or a nasty journalist or whatever, when they're in the wrong phase, then you're saying that basically there was a sort of, you'd get whispering campaigns against someone like Rupert Lowe, and Nigel would be influenced.
We had some dodgy people in UKIP. They climbed on the bandwagon as the more successful we became. Lots and lots of ex-Tories, for example, came in. And he's collecting ex-Tories now. So their heart isn't really in radical politics. Their heart is in staying in politics. And you do not really, Ed, need the brains of an archbishop to spot it. I've got something here because I've been doing some research on a lecture that I'm doing. I wonder if, just very short, if I could read it to you. It's about, it's going back to this concept of leadership and man-management. Mm-hmm. And I'll just read it to you very quickly. The good officer's qualities, it was said, should include forbearance, command of temper, conciliation, firmness, tact, system, consistency, discretion, perseverance, activity, enterprise, zeal, knowledge of human nature, justice, confidence, and self-possession. That was a guidance for a Royal Naval officer. Now, try and guess when you think that was written.
I assume a very long time ago.
Yeah, you're right.
1850.
And that was managing the lower deck and junior officers. Those qualities, you'd need those in spades, would you not, to manage politicians, especially wealthy politicians in their own right. They need very careful husbandry, I would argue. Now the
because
question
they have
is
a sense of their own, they have a sense of their own importance, you mean? Are they entitled? Is that why? Or...
Yes, I think the trouble is I was very lucky in politics because I was doing a lot of TV and stuff at the time in 2013-14. I was doing a lot of television. I was about after Nigel Farage, I was the only MEP anybody had heard of. And of course, I represented Yorkshire and I was a vice president of Yorkshire Pocklington Rugby Club at Yorkshire. And believe me, you couldn't put on any dog. You couldn't put on any side when he walked into the bar at the Pocklington Rugby Club because they would take the piss, something criminal. Saw you on the telly last night, you know, et cetera, laugh, laugh, and a few beers. You couldn't be up your own bum in Yorkshire. It didn't wash. And I'm afraid we do have a problem when, with all politicians, I'm not going to go at one particular problem. They are all up their own backside, most of whom are with no good reason. If you look at them now, modern politician, very few have any achievement to show outside political achievement. Nobody's actually done anything.
One of the things I thought was very interesting was that on the was it today or yesterday, the chap Tice said in an interview on GB News that even if Lowe was exonerated, they wouldn't give him the whip back because they just take the view that he's argumentative and difficult. So he kind of gave the game away. I mean, essentially, that's what it's about. It's this is this investigation, which has magically manifested the day after he's criticised Farage, is just an excuse. They just don't like him. The four of them don't like the other one.
Well, Ed, if that had been in a courtroom, it would have been a wonderful bit of an opportunity for an overacting barrister like Rumble or something like that to actually pounce on that. Mm. So, he would have said, gentlemen and women of the jury, listen to this. He's just admitted this is not about anything but getting rid of Rupert Lowe.
It's not come across well. If we talk about Twitter ratios, and okay, you can say Twitter isn't real life, but because it's a select minority that are on it, perhaps more extreme people. But the reaction to it has not been good. It doesn't come across well if a small party of five people, five men, can't hold themselves together. It just looks terrible, I think. And I don't see.
So 1 year in, and he's lost 20% of his MPs. If you want to look at it that way.
And probably quite a few voters that just think, well, what's the point?
People aren't... I mean, Rupert Lowe is very popular. And, of course, there's some other things that one might argue. Some very sort of solid planks of policy that have been gone back on. For example, the repatriation of illegal immigrants, which really is the whole point of reform, that if you're here illegally, you get sent back no matter how long it takes. And, of course, his very good friend Trump, and I rather suspect it's not his very good friend at the moment, is saying, you know, we will dig you out, we will find you, and we will repatriate you. And that's what a lot of people voted reform on, that platform alone. And he's stepped back from that. And I think he's rejigged it and stepped back, but we're not quite sure where he is. Now, the thing of people like Rupert Lowe, and I have no brief for any of these people, incidentally, when you look at his interventions in politics and his speeches in the House, you knew exactly what he was saying and what he was thinking. Now, you don't know that now with some of the other guys, Tice in particular, who's really, I think, a liability to reform. I rather like Lee Anderson. I rather like his gritty Midlands working class view of things. I rather warm to that, and I think a lot of people do. But I don't think... I think already reform are beginning to say to people, what do they stand for? What's their view on the Ukraine? What is their view on Gaza? What is their view on repatriation? These are the very big things. Nobody can tell me what reform thinks.
That's key. And he's also talking about how maybe we should let Shamima Begum back into the country. Farage has mooted
exactly.
That. This is exactly the opposite of what any voter for reform wants.
I know. It's almost as though perhaps being on the sidelines sniping is a lot more fun and a lot more suited to than actually being in government and having to do something. It's rather nice. I make this illusion. I know it doesn't always work because not everybody plays rugby. It's a bit like playing number seven. Number seven is a light forward and they run around the pitch and all they really have to do is actually nail people, tackle people, smack them to the ground. You know, it's rather fun doing that. But they don't really have to create anything at number seven. Your front row has to do that. Your fly half has to do that. I've only played number seven once because I'm too small. I played number nine, but playing number seven was great one Sunday afternoon. I didn't have any responsibility except knocking people over. How much fun is that?
A greyhound that bites the other greyhounds but doesn't try to win the race. As I think somebody said about the philosopher J.L. Austin. That's a place, that's a niche. And we had a similar thing in Finland when this party True Finns got into power. And there was this guy that was sort of pally with Nigel Farage, actually, called Timo Soini.
And, yes, indeed.
And you may have met him. I think he was an MEP when you were, or something maybe. And he it all just fell apart. He ended up splitting from the party and forming a separate group, and they all lost their seats. And it was a power. It was, again, it was not the people around that were talented, such as the guy called Jussi Halla-aho, fell out with. And so it's a similar, it reminds me of that. So really, in summary then, from your experience of Nigel Farage, this was quite predictable. What do you think is going to occur now? Do you think that reform will just implode in the same way that UKIP did and that the Conservatives will get back?
It's a very difficult prediction here because I think reform have now going down the route of a mad maverick fringe, staying on the fringe. And of course, you can look at the polls as much as you like. You can look at by-elections as much as you like. That is not a Westminster election. That is not Westminster. And that is something that UKIP found out in 2015 when they didn't win a single seat and had just won the year before 4.5 million votes in a European election. It was disastrous because people don't want a maverick party. Now, of course, there's an open goal at the moment because Keir Starmer is completely absurd. His Chancellor of the Exchequer is a laughing stock. And of course, Kemi bad enough, as I call her, I just don't think is up to the job. Although she always seems to me, I've never met her. Seems quite a nice sort of girl, but she's not what is required. So there is an open goal, but that open goal won't stay there forever. Sooner or later, the Conservative Party, and history shows this, as you well know, they get their act together sooner or later. They'll get it together sooner or later. If you go back to 1979, Margaret Thatcher came from nowhere. Nobody had heard of Margaret Thatcher, really, before 1979, 1980. And suddenly she came back as the longest and strongest leader that the party had seen for many, many years. There could be somebody waiting in the wings. We just don't know. But at the moment, it's drifting, as I knew it would, as far as reform is concerned. And I think it's a great shame. Because I think there's a real role there and it could be great. And I think the way forward should be, it won't be because it's actually, it's a limited company, which is owned by the cartel, as it were. It would be a really nice thing to see Nigel play the role of boycott, coming out with his bat and scoring a much needed century, but not captain. Not captain.
And that's what because, it was in the early days of UKIP. That's what it was in 1999. In May 99, the first time I voted, I was June 99, I was doing my A-level history. And I finished my A-level history exam and I went to the polling station and I hovered and I voted for UKIP. The first time I ever voted, even though I was a member of the Conservative Party. And that's what he was. He was the person that did the laughs. And then there was, I don't know what the guy's name was, that was the a former Conservative MP, I think. Former Conservative.
Yes, Roger Natman. Nice fellow. Nice fellow.
Roger Natman. So perhaps what we need. Okay, well, thank you very much, Godfrey. Godfrey's exploring South America at the moment. So let's hope he stays safe and learns some valuable lessons. Maybe you should go to and see Bukele and see how he sorts out countries. That would be
That is very much of what I'm doing in Buenos Aires. We're members of the same institute, the Mises Institute. We're both Austrian school economists, and I, which is basically, for those who don't know in viewing, is no government, please, bugger off government, leave everybody alone to get on with their lives. You can encapsulate Austrian school economics in that one sentence.
Brilliant. Okay, well, look into that, chaps. Meisner Institute. All right, I will see you soon, chaps, and goodbye.
Are you ready for the future of the West?